Let's talk about being prepared. Shockingly, the average person believes they could survive for 2 weeks alone in the wilderness, but a new study reveals most couldn't even spark a fire. The survey of 2,000 Americans show many are confident in their ability to survive in the wild. However, only 17% felt very confident in their ability to start a fire with just flint. That's why tens of thousands rely on the Fire Pit Mini to start fires outdoors. The Fire Pit Mini stove grants anybody the ability to start fires, boil water, and cook food from virtually anywhere with only kindling or leaves as fuel. You could spend hours spinning sticks together or wasting your matches trying to start a fire to stay warm and cook meals. But the Fire Pit Mini Stove is engineered to give you a reliable, effective, and simple way to start a robust fire with little smoke in any condition without the hassle. The Fire Pit Mini Stove is the most effective choice for camping, hunting, traveling, road trips, power outages, emergency, and more. It could be the critical difference between life or death in a crisis. Give the gift of warmth this holiday season by simply placing your order now to get 25% off, along with many other free bonuses like access to the Prepper's Peak exclusive newsletter, free express shipping, and last but not least, 100% lifetime guarantee replacement. Hurry now before they sell out by going to firepitmini.com. That's firepitmini.com. Use promo code Black Friday or just click the link in the description. Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today we have a new guest, Eric Prince. Eric is a U.S.-born entrepreneur, philanthropist, Navy SEAL veteran, and a private equity investor with business interests in Europe, Africa, Middle East, and North America. He's the founder and chairman of Frontier Resource Group, a private equity firm that invests in transformative natural resource projects. Prior to establishing the Frontier Group of Companies, Mr. Prince founded and ultimately sold Blackwater USA, a provider of global security training logistics solutions to the U.S. government and others, which he sold in 2010. Mr. Prince's career of extensive professional engagements throughout the world gives him a unique perspective. And I'd like to welcome, and I am honored to have Eric Prince on the X22 Report Spotlight. Eric, welcome to the Spotlight.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Hey, thanks for being here. So, I mean, let's start off with what's happening in the world and the economy and everything right now, because what we're seeing is we're seeing the entire economic system break down. We're seeing high inflation. We're seeing war start to kick up, and we'll be talking about war in just a sec. And we're starting to see all this happen with the open borders. And I think the people of this country, they're getting worried about what is happening around them. And we can see that everything is breaking down around them. And I mean, you have a unique perspective in all this because you've been around the world, you own Blackwater, and you know what's going on around the world. So what's your take on what's happening here in America with the economic system breaking down and what you're seeing?
Now that we're $33 trillion in debt, I mean, we are suffering from inflation from two reasons. One, just a massive overspend by the federal government. A Democrat party that continues to appropriate more and more money and creating it out of thin air, not even money from taxes. So the Inflation Reduction Act and all the nonsense with the nicely named stuff that the administration has passed the last 3 years is absolutely a fire hose of fuel onto the fire of inflation. Second, you have an over-consolidation of industries where you have less and less competitive behavior that can actually drive down, make these big companies be more efficient. I mean, hospital services are up 250% the last few years, college tuition up 150%, medical care up 140%. And this is not just from inflation, it's because we've allowed the federal government has allowed, and through billions of dollars of lobbying dollars dropped in Washington, to allow all these sectors across industries, banking, insurance, the tech sector, have consolidated to the point that tech is either the sole buyer or the sole seller in a lot of areas. And so You have both of those. It's like a pincer movement coming for the middle class, for the normal guy in America, between a federal government spending too much and big business, which is voracious, and there's not the competition to drive them to be more efficient. It's ugly, and I'm afraid it's going to get more ugly. It's fixable, these problems, but it will require some fundamental change in Washington.
So, do you think we're still in a capitalistic society right now?
Hey, before I forget, X22 just launched its second drop called We the People. It is now live. All you need to do is go to x22store.com. This launch consists of all new items. Everything is going to be limited quantity. These are all new designs that you've never seen before, and they're going to blow your mind. Head over to x22store.com. That's x22store.com. Or visit x22report.com. And click on the banner, or just go to the description down below and click on X22 store. It'll bring you right over to the store. On Monday, November 27th, we'll be unveiling the mystery merch. So head on over to x22store.com. That is x22store.com, or click the link in the description.
Or do you think government is now working with corporations and they're consolidating everything?
We have. You know, it's interesting when you look at the 1920s and 30s in Germany, the German industry looked at what happened with Standard Oil and with some of the super mega companies in America, which eventually were broken up by the trust busters like Teddy Roosevelt, did a great thing with that. The German industry said, we like that hugely consolidated industrial approach so that we're, you know, the cock of the block. And it was really those over cartelized industries which allowed a psychopath like Hitler to really consolidate power because he had very few industries that he had to control. You know, think about it. If he has only 10 or 20 major industries, industrialists that he has to control, it's much harder than dealing with 50,000, 100,000 entrepreneur-led small and medium-sized businesses. And, you know, after World War II, the main mission of the U.S. Army was to denazify Germany, and to demilitarize, denazify, and to break up the cartels that had become German industry, and did so. And that's really why it's why Germany was so competitive all those years is because they were small and medium and very, very competitive. We need a similar antitrust approach, a president that will stand up to these very well moneyed, very well lobbied industrial interests and break them up and make them competitive again. Think about Google and Apple. They, you know, their Google controls 90% of search. They did that because it was a very unregulated industry, and then they were allowed to consolidate way too much by again spending, in their case, hundreds of millions of dollars as a company. And so they effectively control advertising and search. They literally control your ability to gather data. So that requires a very populist outsider approach. The normal political parties, I think, are incapable of that level of shock to the system because they are both so addicted to the lobbyist cash.
So, do you think that we're heading down the same path as Nazi Germany right now?
I certainly hope not. Look, America is still one of the best places in the world to invest. We have the underpinnings of a federal system, and our founding fathers were so brilliant in that they wrote the Constitution and all that we need to cure our ills is specified in the Constitution, you know, especially in things like the 10th Amendment, where it says everything that's specifically delegated to the federal government remains the sole purview of the states. So we need state governors to flex up and to say, no, federal government, we're not listening to you on this mandate and all this craziness, you know, because the federal government puts out like, I think it's like 78 or 82,000 pages average per year of new rules just written by the federal bureaucracy. I would say the real constitutional crisis we have is we're supposed to have three branches of government, executive, legislative, judicial, but the fact is we have a fourth branch that is unelected, unaccounted, unaccountable, and that is the federal bureaucracy in Washington. And so the states need to pare that down in an ornery manner, if possible, But the more states band together and impair the federal government from doing stupid things, we need that. Look, the root of our problem is that the federal government has this ability to print unlimited amounts of money because the dollar is the world's reserve currency. Mm-hmm. Because we had such an amazing economy for so long with almost no competition, it made the dollar the de facto currency of choice. Now, it's allowed Washington to just do almost an infinite amount of stupid things because they have so much extra money they can throw it. That's why you have all these massive wealth transfer programs in all these entitlements, which creates all kinds of addictions. Look at what we've done. Look at what the federal government has done to the Indian tribes, creating lots of dependency. You took what were a proud, hardworking, capable people, and you've ruined them with substance abuse and welfare dependency. You could say the same thing about the black population in America, that even despite overcoming slavery and segregation and Jim Crow laws and all the rest, as a group, they were advancing and making more money and had family structure and black-owned businesses were doing well. When the federal government got involved and effectively replaced black men as husbands and fathers, man, it's the same the same terrible results. And so now, you know, you have a huge amount of black population that is born out of wedlock without a family structure, and that's, you know, statistics don't lie. It is really difficult for black kids born in that situation to get ahead in life, and especially when they're stuck in really, really bad government-run schools that are unaccountable, unelected. Well, sorry, the school boards are elected, but the unions aren't.
Right.
And, you know, the Klan could not have come up with a better way to keep certain people down than just the horrifically run government programs that seem to plague these certain segments of society.
Yeah, and now that you see crime running rampant in all these cities, it's just the whole thing is a complete and utter disaster right now. And I think a lot of people are watching this, and I think a lot of people are shocked by what they're seeing. Because what I've noticed, like if you go back to World War One, World War Two, or Rome, it seems like we're at that point where the entire system that's controlled by the central bank, because they're the ones who create the currency, it seems like we're at that point where the system, from the debt load and from everything that they set up, is collapsing. And it always seems like the next step is some type of war to cover all of this up. I don't know if you see that happening, or, you know, you see us heading in that direction.
Look, our opponents, well, I see all kinds of, you know, Britain in the 19th century, in the 1800s, really after the defeat of Napoleon, 1815, for the next 100 years, Britain ruled the high seas, the British Navy,
right,
and the British Empire, and they had a rising colonial power, sorry, continental power of Germany, and eventually they clashed big time in World War One. The Battle of Jutland, the British Navy got spanked quite badly, and that was really the inflection point. That's when the British Empire really started to collapse. I worry that a naval altercation of China versus U.S. Would have the same effect. It pierces that veneer of invincibility that the U.S. has, and it would lead to a catastrophic collapse of the dollar as well. Look, China doesn't want a war. Maybe some other generals do, but as a society, they're not built for it and they're not ready for it. The United States certainly is not ready for a major war. The fact that our industrial base is so anemic that it can't even keep a mid-sized land war in Ukraine fully stocked, that they're having to buy from India and Korea and Pakistan and whoever else might have industrial capacity, shows how pathetic and over-consolidated and over-bureaucratic our industrial base is. So look, all the problems, the hotspots we're seeing develop around the world is a direct result of of incompetence and weakness shown by the U.S. And it really started with the collapse and the lack of solving the Afghan debacle. And I tried to give Trump a different way to do it, a way to keep the lights on at a, it would have cost 5% of what the U.S. was spending. And he circled back with me 3 years after, towards the end of his administration. He said, "Eric, you're right. I should have listened to you on Afghanistan." I said, "Mr. President, there's still time." But I don't think he ever really controlled his national security apparatus. Biden certainly doesn't control his. The bureaucracy does. And the debacle that was Afghanistan, and our opponents don't fear us, and they smell blood in the water, which is why things like this Gaza attack happened, like the Houthis literally grabbing commercial vessels, going up the Red Sea. You'll see lots of adventurism. You see Venezuela. Venezuela, single largest concentration of hydrocarbons in the world, even more than Saudi Arabia. And they've, you know, if you've been paying attention to Guyana, their neighbor to the east, an ex-British colony, they've just made Exxon Chevron have enormous oil discoveries there worth tens of billions of dollars. And conveniently, Venezuela just dusted off a 130-year-old land dispute with Venezuela claiming, "Oh, by the way, that's our land. Do you want to take half the coastline of Guyana," which coincidentally is where all the hydrocarbons are. Venezuela is having a referendum internally about what they should do about it early December. So expect something to kick off there as well. So you're just going to see compounding chaos caused by a lack of effective response anywhere by the U.S. When you see all the coups and the debacle in sub-Saharan Africa, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, soon to be Chad, all of those came from A, the French, and mostly the U.S. not doing any kind of effective counterterrorism response for the last 15 years. If we're going to have all this money and all this capability, then someone needs to be held responsible for putting out these fires and not just managing them. And it's pathetic, and it is reminiscent of the Roman Empire collapsing at the periphery. This illusion of Pax Americana. The small and medium nations in the world are extremely concerned by the lack of leadership, the collapse of leadership in the United States, because they're the ones that have to live with the consequences, literally where the rubber meets the road. And so it's going to be a worse year. 2024 is going to be a very, very difficult, dangerous time. So for your investment-minded audience, prepare for things we haven't seen in 100 years. So in terms of weird shortages or bank runs or other problems. I mean, think about the Chinese government funds, coordinates, organizes the export and smuggling of tons and tons of fentanyl to be imported into the United States and to be laced with pot or other illegal drugs, but now blended in fatal doses, and it killed 109,000 Americans last year. Literally 33 times what we lost on September 11, and they're just getting away with it. And when the Secretary of State was in China, he said, "Well, yeah, this fentanyl problem, it's really just Chinese stuff getting sent to the wrong locations." That's what he said. So a collapse of deterrence is exceedingly dangerous for American liberty.
So let me just go to Israel and Gaza for a sec. It looks like they're having a ceasefire right now, trading hostages. Do you think it's the end? Now things will calm down in that area?
No. There's a lot of unfinished business that the IDF has to clean out yet. I mean, I don't know how they, as a military, as a country, wants to live next to an organization like Hamas, where the leader just saying October 7 was great, and we're going to do it a second, third, fourth, sixth, tenth time, until we win, until we wipe Israel off the map. I don't know how you negotiate a ceasefire with someone like that who is constantly prodding to exterminate you. There's no place for half measures there. And so even though they've surrounded Gaza City and they've penetrated some of it, Gaza City is even not cleaned out yet. But you still have two other major concentrations there in Khan Yunis, in the kind of the southern two-thirds of Gaza, and then right against the border, the Rafah area. Another that's probably where the remaining hostages are, still held by Hamas. So there will be continued challenges. The tunnels will be a huge problem, continue to be a big problem. 300 and some miles of tunnels that, you know, you think about the money that was allocated to Gaza for building infrastructure for civilians, and you know, Hamas is publishing, praising, touting videos of them ripping up water pipes provided by the European Union and turning them into large bore rockets to send into Israel. Look, most Palestinians, I don't think, support Hamas. They want to just be able to live their lives. So as difficult that it is separating Hamas and killing them and protecting the Palestinian people is an exceedingly difficult job, but I think it's the one that has to be done. Because I don't think Egypt doesn't want them. Jordan doesn't want them. And, you know, Israel has to deal with their illegal settlement issue as well in the West Bank. And that's the challenges of a coalition government. We have the ultra-Orthodox dragging the country one direction, and then the more secular folks want to have Israel a second way. That's so they have some internal challenges they have to deal with, but the one uniting thing they all have is no one wants to have another October 7, nor, you know, and as bad as that was in the south, there is like 10,000 rockets that have been fired. Hezbollah in the north has 150,000 rockets. If you think what the Iranians have been doing really since the U.S. went into Iraq, remember, Iran-Iraq war in the 80s, it was Sunni versus Shia. Mm-hmm. And Saddam started it, and it ended in a massive bloodbath on both sides and basically a stalemate. But since then, and especially when the U.S. removed Saddam from power, the Iranians have been focusing on building the Shia crescent, putting their tentacles into Baghdad so they control Baghdad, and they do. And the U.S. was too stupid to see it coming and to stop it. I remember in my old days running Blackwater in 2004, the head of the Iraqi intelligence service came to see me with his agency handler. And he said, "We're seeing evidence of Iranian Quds Force, IRGC officers coming to southern Iraq, setting up political offices, assassination teams, et cetera, to put their tentacles, to put their hooks into Iraqi society to control it. And we want to stop it." And so we priced up a program for them to help with that. The agency, CIA, was going to fund it. And it was all blocked by Condi Rice, the national security advisor for Bush, saying, "Oh, Iran is not our enemy. We have to respect the political process, all the rest." That is the kind of wishful thinking that comes from Washington and not respecting nations in the area that understand one thing, and that is force and power. If we'd helped the Iraqis sever the control mechanisms that Iran was putting in the country, Iraq would be a free, proud, and independent country. But I go back to the Iranians have been focusing on subjugating Iraq. They've done it. They rolled into Syria, significant presence and not control, but they have access all the way to Lebanon. Why? Because they wanted to load up Hezbollah, their Shia army, on the northern border of Israel with hundreds of thousands of rockets, and they've done that. If the Hezbollah guys went full on and launched hard against northern Israel, it would overwhelm the Iron Dome's ability to absorb and to defend that many missiles. It's a staggering amount, and there would be a lot of damage. Fortunately, a bit of American deterrence, and two aircraft carriers parked in the Eastern Med at least made them reconsider the merits of that, of the Iranians and Hezbollah going hard at Israel. That would have been a another existential threat to Israel, and would have certainly led to probably a cascading, very ugly war.
Do you think Iran is behind Hamas?
Let's talk about being prepared. Shockingly, the average person believes they could survive for 2 weeks alone in the wilderness, but a new study reveals most couldn't even spark a fire. The survey of 2,000 Americans show many are confident in their ability to survive in the wild. However, only 17% felt very confident in their ability to start a fire with just flint. That's why tens of thousands rely on the Fire Pit Mini to start fires outdoors. The Fire Pit Mini stove grants anybody the ability to start fires, boil water, and cook food from virtually anywhere with only kindling or leaves as fuel. You could spend hours spinning sticks together or wasting your matches trying to start a fire to stay warm and cook meals. But the Fire Pit Mini Stove is engineered to give you a reliable, effective, and simple way to start a robust fire with little smoke in any condition without the hassle. The Fire Pit Mini Stove is the most effective choice for camping, hunting, traveling, road trips, power outages, emergency, and more. It could be the critical difference between life or death in a crisis. Give the gift of warmth this holiday season by simply placing your order now to get 25% off, along with many other free bonuses like access to the Prepper's Peak exclusive newsletter, free express shipping, and last but not least, 100% lifetime guarantee replacement. Hurry now before they sell out by going to firepitmini.com. That's firepitmini.com. Use promo code Black Friday, or just click the link in the description.
Yes.
They're funding them?
They have long-term been a funder of them, even though Hamas is Sunni and very Muslim Brotherhood friendly.
Right.
So part of the funding comes from, oddly enough, the US and the Europeans. Second big tranche from Iran, and especially the technical assistance, whether it's the drones that took out the border guard stations and the intel planning to help target the kibbutzes, and especially the Israeli bases and border security bases in the south. So the technical assistance definitely came from Iran, but the other big chunk of money came from Qatar. And Qatar has a very different, much more Muslim Brotherhood friendly approach to policy. If you think about what Sinn Féin was to the IRA in Ireland, Sinn Féin was the fundraiser, politically acceptable thing to be part of and to fund, versus the IRA, which was the militant wing that was blowing up Harrods and trying to kill the British Prime Minister. The Muslim Brotherhood is the Sinn Féin of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Okay, a very, very radical Salafi, hardcore Islamic terrorism organization. And Qatar has been behind a lot of those, a lot of that funding. They did it in Mozambique. They've done it in Somalia. They've done it. They were directly behind when Mubarak fell in Egypt in 2011. They funded Mohamed Morsi, the Muslim Brotherhood, get to take power in Egypt. And so that Qatari money funded by all those gas sales into Asia has a very nefarious effect on the Middle East and Africa. And the other big problem is that Qatari money sprinkled around Europe. There's just been a bunch of members of the European Parliament discovered with a lot of cash from the Qataris, illegally paid to them. A lot of Qatari money sprinkled around London, hiring former politicians, journalists, owning a lot of real estate. And there's a lot of Qatari money sprinkled around Washington and the United States. Qatar is the single largest external funder of universities in the United States. So when you see an explosion of Hamas demonstrations in America supporting Hamas, that is directly ties back to Qatari money. I think Cornell is their biggest recipient. They've received almost $2 billion from the Qataris.
Does it go back to Obama when he was in office? Because he gave pallets of cash to Iran, and it looks like he was, you know, part, he was, I guess, calling the shots of where the military should bomb ISIS, and ISIS, you know, exploded in Syria. So, I mean,
look, I would say the degradation of American credibility and authority started with the Obama administration significantly, whether a very half-assed way of them dealing with ISIS to in a lot of cases, you know, I think the Arab Spring, remember that started in 2011, we had a lot of country, a lot of people on the streets going after Arab dictators.
Right.
The fact is, I think the Arab Spring actually started in Iran in 2009. But there you had millions of people in the streets, students, environmentalists, labor unions, civil society people, women that didn't want to wear, you know, veils and to be able to, you know, wear skirts and drink beer and listen to rock and roll. They came out big time to protest against their regime, and not anything, crickets from Washington, crickets from the Obama administration. Not, we support Iranian freedom, we support the right to free speech, we support women's rights in Iran. Nothing, not a damn thing said by the Obama Washington crowd. And then 2011, when it kicks off first in Tunisia with a guy named Mohamed Bouazizi, who was, you know, these people were not protesting for the right to vote. They were just protesting literally to have some path to economic prosperity.
Right.
First Tunisia and then Yemen and Syria and a lot of these protests. And in many cases, the Obama administration was promoting it and supporting it. And they supported getting rid of Mubarak because they wanted the Muslim Brotherhood guy in place. So you have that happening there. And then, of course, in the Western Pacific Ocean, you have China. In my travels, I used to be on the board of a Hong Kong listed company on the listed stock exchange there. And in my travels in China, I actually met the guy that ran the Chinese state-owned enterprise that ended up building many of those islands. Okay, because what did China do? They every problem that's come at China in the last 150 years came by sea, from the, you know, the opium wars in the 1840s, and then the U.S. came, and then the Europeans came at the end of the 1800s, and then the Imperial Japanese Army and Navy came by sea and ravaged China. So China has sought to build these rings of islands that they're basically claiming any kind of shoal waters or shallow area in the whole South China Sea as their own territory. Now, this is land right off of the Philippines, off of Malaysia, and off of Vietnam. Clearly, if you look at any map, it does not belong to China, but China bullied in. And so I met the guy from the company that built these islands, and he said, we never had any plan or even our strategic wish list to build islands out there. But we found the Obama administration to be so vapid, such an empty shell, that we tried it, and then there was no response. And we did it again and again and again and again. And so during the Obama administration, they have built thousands of acres of now what they consider sovereign Chinese territories. And they said, oh, no, first, it's just going to be for weather collection and communications and search and rescue. Bullshit. They're fully, fully gunned up bases with missiles, with aircraft, with port facilities, et cetera, mini bases all over the South China Sea, which threatens our trading partners and it threatens the freedom of navigation across the whole region. Mm-hmm. And again, it came because of a continued weakness from Washington. And so that the foreign so-called foreign policy experts that have been in any kind of responsibility from 2000 until now, holy shit, man. If that's the best that Harvard and Yale and Princeton are giving us, then let's go back to community colleges and hire people from there, because this is just not the answer.
Do you think the next move for China is to go into Taiwan?
It is a very stated goal of China to retake Taiwan by any means necessary. And they'll try to do it diplomatically. They're trying to just absorb it and make it a fait accompli. but force is certainly on the table. So there's an election scheduled in Taiwan in January of next year. So in 60, 70 days. And depending which party, you have the DPP, the Democratic People's Party, or Progressive People's Party, is actually very, very, very left wing and kind of woke and crazy, but they're pro at least status quo, not becoming a subject subjugated by Beijing. You have the Kuomintang, the kind of the original political party that went out there in 1949 that fled there, is very, very pro Beijing. You have another guy who's running as an independent because he couldn't get the nomination for the KMT. His name is Guo. And that's the guy that owns, I can't think of the name. It's the company that makes all the, manufactures all the iPhones in China.
Oh, wow.
He's running, and he is the most pro-Beijing guy. So it's, watch that. You'll know that by February of next year. The weather window to do something aggressive and kinetic in Taiwan is very small because of the winds through the Taiwan Straits, and there's really no great landing beaches in Taiwan. So it's not great for amphibious assault. So, but the only calm months really are May and June. So I'd be the Chinese economy. Kyle Bass did a fantastic speech on all the uneconomic things that the PRC is doing to prepare themselves for sanctions and for conflict. Things that a country that was just focused on normal trade would not be doing. For example, the big Chinese state-owned banks are dumping their entire portfolio of aircraft leasing at a severe discount. The big real estate companies are dumping any of their U.S. held properties, again, at severe discounts. Why? Because they're preparing for big sanctions. Oh, Foxconn. That's the name of the company that makes all the iPhones in China. Sorry, my brain was not going to let that one go. Foxconn. So literally when you're buying an iPhone, you're buying it from the guy who is the most pro-Beijing candidate in Taiwan. So look, it's Xi has accumulated more power than any Chinese ruler since Mao himself. He just elected himself to a third term, which has not been done since Mao as well. And he's effectively elected himself dictator for life. And he's consolidated. He has thrown out any unreliable rivals out of the standing committee and out of the Politburo. So it's... it is a difficult time, and it's a bad time for American deterrence to not be rock solid and scary to our enemies.
So, what
the
do
foreign
you...
policy of the United States? The foreign policy of the United States should be that our friends love us, our rivals respect us, and our enemies fear us. The problem is our enemies don't fear us, our rivals think they can best us, and our friends are scratching their heads saying, "Why is the United States kicking us in the balls instead of being friends to us?" So we're kind of wrong on almost every element of foreign policy.
Is the United States, would they intervene if something happens in Taiwan? I mean, what would the U.S. do?
That's a good question. There's a lot of strategic ambiguity. There's like the Chinese have done in how they built those islands. They did a test. They did something small, and like they do now with their maritime militia, which is thousands of fishing boats that look like fishing boats, and they might go fish somewhere and they might not catch much fish, but they have presence because they're staffed by effectively Chinese coast guardsmen. I can see the Chinese taking some of the Taiwan owns some islands that are actually very, very close to the Chinese mainland, like Quemoy and Matsu, which are only a few kilometers. I can see them staging a crisis and taking those islands for some bullshit reason, but they'll say, "All right, Biden, are you going to send the aircraft carriers for this little island?" And so they'll try to eat that elephant one bite at a time. And again, my frustration with the so-called smart people in Washington is they lack creativity for nuanced responses to an enemy that's going to kind of salami slice. That's kind of what the Chinese policy has been, salami slicing of constantly just slicing off a little bit more and a little bit more until they get the entire roll. Trump is, you know, really the first president in a long time. And I've said this before. The Chinese foreign policy towards America was basically building their fence in our yard and taking another foot every year. And Trump is the first one to come along and say, hey, get the hell back on your side of the line. Mm-hmm. And that really threw them. It really threw them for a loop. They did not know how to deal with Donald Trump, which was good for America. And the predictability and the paid offness that is Washington and the corporate class must come to an end. In the same way, we've allowed overconsolidation of industries. When you look at some of the super major money managers, the BlackRock, the Vanguards, all those kind of guys, when they're managing tens of billions of dollars of Chinese money, Chinese government money, and they're taking fees and upside for the money they're managing, and they're saying pro-China things in the American media and into Washington and using that financial might, and they're not called on being effectively foreign agents when they're towing the line for the Chinese government, that is a big problem, and it also needs to be addressed by the next administration. So, look, I believe in America. I believe in the Constitution. I believe America's best days can be ahead of us, but we do have to trim some of these really bad habits that we've gotten into the last 30 some years, because there's no guarantee that American independence lasts for another 10, 20, or 250 years. I mean, we're coming up on 250 years as a republic. And if you look back in history, republics don't have a great track record of lasting much beyond 250 years. Let's square our shit away, so that we leave something better to our kids and not the disaster that we seem to be teetering towards now.
I agree with that. Let me ask you this. Are you worried about the open borders? I mean, if we look at what's happening out in Israel and we just talked about Taiwan, since we have these open borders and that they're really not vetting anyone and we have all these people coming into this country.
Of course not. Look, it is consistent with the Democratic Party and their pursuit of power. And for them, they don't really give a shit about what the Republic looks like. They care about perpetuating political power. And yeah, I agree with Tucker Carlson's comments on this. It's about demographic loading. And if we allow tens of millions, I think there's 30 million foreign-born people in America now. Mm-hmm. Most of them came in illegally. My view on immigration policy is we should have a high fence, but a wide gate. Okay. A high fence, meaning knock off the illegal immigration, but simplify and de-bureaucratize the process, but go and recruit the people that we want to be Americans and don't just take the people that literally fall off the back of a truck, having paid a coyote to smuggle them in. And of course there's no vetting, and why we should care if we believe in the Constitution and in limited government, having unlimited amounts of people come in from countries that have no appreciation for American liberty, for limited government, for their role as citizens, as free men in America, that they come and they're used to coming from a big paternalist, corrupt government that has their finger on them. That is not the people we want as our next citizens and voters, etc., especially since our American education system does such a lousy job of inculcating any kind of American values and appreciation for limited government. It's exceedingly dangerous. And so I know for a fact that for years there have been thousands and thousands of Iranian military age males flying to Venezuela, picking up Venezuelan passports and coming to America as illegal immigrants and settling in places like Miami and New York and Washington and LA. If we got to a place to a shooting war with Iran, trust me, those sleeper cells would be activated, causing significant carnage inside of America, like 4,000 Hamas guys did in Gaza. That is not something we want to encounter having to deal with or imagine having to deal with. But that's the reality that we have. You know, a country borders are a delineation of style of governance. And we should in America be have a definable border because we believe in limited government, the rights of citizens, private property, etc., versus Mexico, which has really become almost a narco state. It's not controlled by, significantly influenced by big cartels, big multinational criminal syndicates, and all the problems that they bring. If we don't defend and recognize a delineation of that, then that's what we're inevitably going to become. And so this has to be, it will be solved at the ballot box, or unfortunately it's going to be solved by a cartridge box. But nature hates a vacuum, and something's going to fill it.
Yeah, well, it seems like they want to bring us into that area where people can't speak freely, you can't own a weapon, they can arrest you for any reason, keep you in prison. It seems like we're heading down that path. I mean, just look at the censorship today. We've come to find out with Twitter, because of the Twitter files, that the government was working with Twitter to actually censor many, many people. And this has expanded, and there's just censorship all over the place. I mean, it started off with gun control, where they were just trying to get the weapons away. And then it morphed into, oh, free speech, that you can't say certain things, you can't counter their narrative. And I think the American people, I think they're starting to see this, and they're starting to realize that, wow, this is getting a lot worse than we could ever imagine. And the lengths that these individuals are going to, like the Biden administration and all the people that are working with him, and many governors and mayors, actually, they're really violating our constitutional rights every single step of the way. I mean, if you go back in time, we know that the government is spying on us through phones, spying on us with other devices. They want to put a kill switch in your car now to shut it down, you know, anytime they want. Of course, they're saying, you know, if they're in a high speed chase, but we know what it's really going to be used for. I think we're starting to see this right now. I think we're at this tipping point of, you know, which way do we go? Are the people going to wake up and, you know, stop this? Because just like you said, republics only last for like 250 years. I believe we're at this tipping point where people have to make a decision. Do you want to keep the country, or do you want these people to run over us? And we're going to live in a socialist, communist type of country.
I could not agree more. This is a unique place on the planet. We stand on the shoulders of giants. When you look at how brilliant the founding fathers were to write a document anticipating all the stupidity that moneyed interests and cartels, corporate cartels or political cartels would try to push on the country, we have to pare down and make sure that the Bill of Rights still exists and is respected. So I you know, from the Blackwater days and the abuse that came when the federal government and the Democrat Party basically sent every bit of the federal government after me and after Blackwater, when, you know, the IRS, the longtime senior IRS agent had to literally come to my farm with my accountant as part of yet another audit. And the guy said, man, I've been at this for 25 years. And I've never been under so much pressure to get someone as to get Eric Prince. And that's a microcosm of the kind of nonsense the federal government threw at me and the whole company. And then fast forward another 15 years, and you see the nonsense that happened around the 2020 election campaign and the big tech, like you said, colluding with the federal government to censor, to literally throw off a certain free speech or conservative voices off of their app stores, mm-hmm. closing them out. We had a I had a team of guys that we were working on a cyber forensic capability, and we pivoted, and we just decided, look, if free people need the ability to communicate freely and securely and not be subject to the whims and vagaries of big tech and some 20-something super leftist tech weenie sitting in Silicon Valley. And so we pivoted. Our CTO had actually was the guy that developed the original Pegasus virus, which is used for remote hacking of phones. But he developed it as a way for a phone company to do remote service on your phone. When it became offensive, he left and built the most secure phone in the world, still used by many, many governments. And then he left and built the phone that controls most of the world's pacemakers, because you can't have a hackable pacemaker because you can shut somebody off with a keystroke. So he really understands offense. He really understands defense, and he's built a team. And over the last 3.5 years, we have built a phone, and it works, and it's now out. It's called Unplugged, and it is our hardware, made in Indonesia, not in China. Supply chain coming not from China. Chips from Taiwan, camera from Japan, etc. And so that hardware, comparable in speed, storage, camera quality to whatever the big guys are selling now. But our operating system does not have an advertising ID, and it is incapable of, and it, well, its purpose is to block the harvesting of your data that is routinely done now through an iPhone or a Google mobile services operating on an Android. So when you sign onto one of those phones and you scroll through the user agreement that nobody reads,
Right.
they say, yeah, basically, we're collecting your data and we're selling it. And so those phone makers, they know where you go, what you buy, who you call, what you browse. And they sell that data, average of about $180 per user per year. And that's before even the apps that you put on your phone, whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn or WhatsApp or Google Maps or any of those. Collect and harvest your data and sell it to advertisers to sell you stuff. So our phone intentionally prevents that from happening. And we have our own secure messenger and VPN and antivirus and store. Of course, our store can hold all the full spectrum of free speech apps, right wing, left wing, center wing, religious freedom, banking, etc. And because our phone doesn't have an advertising ID, and because we control all the endpoints, it is exceedingly difficult to hack our phone. And so, if you're using it as a banking platform, or for digital currencies, or for communicating with your friend group or your alumni or whatever, and you just want to know that your circle of communications is tight and secure, Unplugged is the kind of phone that you need. And you can order them, and we got 9,000 more coming in late January, and we're ramping it up. Look, we're taking on two of the biggest companies in the world, but we have a team, and we've done it. We have a completely independent phone. It'll run on T-Mobile, AT&T, and we actually have just developed a partnership with a global roaming chip that'll work in 150 companies, 150 countries, and you can even buy that SIM anonymously or with crypto. So we are focused on people that are want to be free, want to communicate freely with their friends, with their family, and not be subject to big tech crawling in their knickers. And I promise you we'll never have a pregnant man emoji on an unplugged phone.
So let me just ask you this: with the Google, the Android phones, and the iPhone, I'm assuming government can access the microphone and the camera in those phones?
Yes. Yes, they can. Well, before even governments, the manufacturers do. I don't know how many people I've told about the phone and they recount a story of, man, yeah, I was talking to my friends or talking to my wife about some unusual commercial product, just talking about it in the room, didn't search it, didn't type anything on it, just talking about it. And the next day they're getting advertising pushing that specific niche product. So yes. big government and big tech is listening, learning, digitally profiling you constantly. Our unplugged phone is the first phone of its in the world with its own firewall, with hard on-off switches that you can say microphone off, Wi-Fi is off, touch to pay, hard blocks for ad trackers and malwares, etc. We even have an actual kill switch on our phone so that when you turn the phone off and you slide the switch over, it separates the battery from the electronics. If you switch off so-called your iPhone or your Android phone that has, or put it in airplane mode, it's not off. It's still listening. It's still pinging. It's still pinging off towers, building a digital breadcrumb trail of everywhere you've gone and everyone you've interacted with. So our phone is designed to maximize your privacy. Our secure messenger even has its own dump switch that if you're under threat and someone says, unlock your phone, I'm going to look at those messages. You can enter an unlock code and it wipes all the messengers, all the messages off the phone, gone, unrecoverable. So we have built this phone for free people to communicate freely and to maximize their privacy, really focusing on the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. First Amendment being free speech, freedom of association, freedom of religion, and the fourth, the right to not be illegally searched, which the federal government seems hell-bent on doing, especially against citizens, while at the same time, as you said, allowing millions of people into the country with no vetting, no security, basically allowing people that their first act in America was to commit a crime, letting them go scot-free to the point of taking them to the airports and putting them on airplanes, flying them around the country. This is madness and it must stop.
Yeah. Is your phone encrypted? So when you make a call or you text or you do anything, is there some type of encryption?
Yeah, it is all peer-to-peer encrypted. Now, if you make a regular cell phone call, me calling with my regular phone to your phone, that's not encrypted. But we have a secure messenger that is highly encrypted, peer-to-peer, and it generates a new encryption key every call, every text.
And what about the apps? Like, because I know people who have Android and iPhones, they have certain apps. Can you get the same apps from the App Store for your phone?
Yes. So whether it's your banking or insurance, so yes, those apps work on our phone. They look a little differently because those apps are not harvesting your data and putting advertising right back in your face. Mm-hmm. But they do work. We even have a paid navigation app because again, Google Earth or Waze might be really convenient, but it absolutely harvests where you go, how fast you drive, and who you interact with constantly. And that's, I think at the end of the day, when people analyze what happened in Gaza, a big part of their intel collection was done by collecting the cell phone advertising intelligence data off of phones, which can be bought commercially. You can buy all the ADINT data for Southern Israel for a couple $1,000s. That's actually how, without warrants, the federal government wrapped up anybody that came anywhere near the Capitol building on January 6th. Mm-hmm. It was off the cell phone advertising intelligence data, which our phone does not have.
So
physically does not have an advertising. It's incapable of having that on the phone.
So if somebody wanted to purchase that phone, where do they need to go to get the phone?
You can go to unplugged.com and you can pre-order. And the next big batch is coming in January. So you could order now for Christmas. And this is real. We're fully financed. And we have an independent phone platform that is will give you communications privacy outside of the Google and Apple universe. And look, there's 4 billion smartphones in the world, which means there's like 1.2, 1.3 billion sold per year. Look, we need a hundredth of 1%, and we're enormously sustainable and successful. And so we'll be the will be there for the remnant of people that still value their communications, privacy, and security. They can still communicate with the world, but on their terms, keeping control of your data, not by us, not by Unplugged, but by each individual phone owner to their friend and family group.
Great. Hey, Eric, thank you very much for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. People wanted to see you on social media or see your other work. Where should they go?
So I just started I'm on LinkedIn. I'm not on any other social media, but I actually just started a podcast mostly focused on foreign affairs. It's called Off Leash with Eric Prince. And that'll come out every
what
every
platform
couple
is
weeks.
That? What platform is that on?
It's on Rumble and Spotify and YouTube.
Okay.
And I think it's on Apple as well.
Okay.
It literally just started it last month. But I couldn't remain silent anymore because I have a lot of kids and I have grandkids and just not happy with the direction the country is heading. And I think people that that think clearly, that have a modicum of common sense, need to stand up and be counted.
Once again, thank you very much for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.